Blog Talk Radio.
This is Monica Leal welcoming you to the LL Research radio program, In the Now, Q&A with Carla L. Ruckert. Today is Friday, February 10th, 2012. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. I will be asking Carla questions that come from you. If you would like to ask Carla a question live on the air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. Again, that number is 646-595-2294. Or you can join the chat room on the webpage for In the Now at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. When submitting questions, please remember that this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I am Monica Leal, and I'm talking with Carla L. Ruckert of LL Research. We'll be here every Friday at 8 p.m. Eastern. Hi, Carla. How was your week?
Hey, Monica. I had a really good week. How about you?
Yeah, really interesting. overall, very good. But, you know, some interesting catalyst, but things really turned out good in the end. So, gosh, I'm just grateful for that.
Super. Yeah, me too. I had a couple of really good doctor's appointments, and they say that the things that we're doing, although it seems like a long, long time, are working out really well. I'm going in the right direction. That sounds really good, feels really good.
Good. Well, I'm so glad to hear that. I know everyone continues to be concerned and continues to hold you in our prayers, so we're always glad to get good news from you that you're making progress in your healing process.
Thanks. I really am.
Okay. Well, we do have a live caller, so I'd like to ask our caller to just hang on for a few more minutes. We're going to open the show with our opening quote from Ra and have a little commentary on that, and then we will be available to take questions. So we're going to start with a quote from session one, the very first session. Ra, I am Ra. I have not spoken through this instrument before. We had to wait until she was precisely tuned as we send a narrow band vibration. We greet you in the love and in the light of our infinite creator. We have watched your group. We have been called to your group, for you have a need for the diversity of experiences in channeling, which go with a more intensive, or as you might call it, advanced approach to the system of studying the patterns of the illusions of your body, your mind, and your spirit, which you call seeking the truth. We hope to offer you a somewhat different slant upon the information, which is always and ever the same. The confederation of planets in the service of the infinite creator has only one important statement. That statement, my friends, as you know, is all things, all of life, all of the creation is part of one original thought. Let us for a moment consider thought. What is it, my friends, to take thought? Took you then thought today? What thoughts did you think today? What thoughts were part of the original thought today? In how many of your thoughts did the creation abide? Was love contained? And was service freely given? You are not part of a material universe. You are part of a thought. You are dancing in a ballroom in which there is no material. You are dancing thoughts. You move your body, your mind, and your spirit in somewhat eccentric patterns, for you have not completely grasped the concept that you are part of the original thought.
I love that quote, and I chose it for today because I'm sentimental by nature. And I wanted to remember with everyone the time some 30 years ago now, 31 years ago almost, when this happened. Of course, the first time that I received a communication from those of Ra, I had challenged vigorously because I didn't want to take communication from somebody named Ra. I was familiar with the Egyptian system of myths, and the sun god was not what you would call a truly gentle god of love. It was not the way I wanted to go, and I challenged and challenged, and they met the challenge perfectly well. And I thought, okay, let's see what these people have to say. And that's the way it began. I just wanted Monica to share with you all tonight. That's how it began, huh? That's the first thing they heard. It was the first thing we heard, and Jim wasn't even in the house at that time. I was teaching an advanced student channeling. Don was sitting in the circle, and Jim came in about halfway through the session with a bunch of groceries, and the group Ra had to wait for a minute while I regained my tuning. At any rate, what I really wanted to talk about was that last paragraph. Let's consider thought. What is it to take thought? What thoughts have you had today? How many of your thoughts were part of the original thought, which is a thought of love? It's so very central to the message of those of Ra. And it starts out cleanly and purely and sweetly with that which they have to say. You are not part of a material universe. You are part of a thought. They say later in the session, all things are one. But that one thing contains love and service freely given. To me, that's so inspiring. I don't really need detailed instructions to understand what those of Ra were bringing through for us to understand. Because they simply ask us, are your thoughts loving today? And if they're not, which often, I must admit, almost every time I get out in the car and start driving and somebody cuts me off in traffic, well, there goes my thought. I lose the open heart real fast and have to regain it again. But, you know, it's a matter of realizing every time that you drop out of the open heart, uh-oh, there it goes. Time to do a little tuning, time to get it back. You're dancing in a ballroom. And I love that image, too, because I'm a dancer by nature, because I'm a dancer by training as well. I've had 18 years of training, 6 in ballet and 12 in modern dance. The summers of my childhood were filled with modern dance, a kind of dance called Noyes Rhythm, N-O-Y-E-S. It's a person's name, Florence Fleming Noyes, who created Noyes Rhythm. And her theory was that the rhythms of nature were in us too, and we were in them, and that all of nature was one thing, and we could express every energy in creation with our bodies. And so all of my childhood is dappled with free dancing and being a bear and a starfish and everything else you could possibly imagine to the tunes of classical music and ragtime and a beautiful piano played on a sprungboard floor out in the middle of nature. So I come to the theory that all is one, very vulnerable and very open to it, because that was my experience as a child. It's interesting to me that they point out that you move your body, your mind, and your spirit in somewhat eccentric patterns in this dance, because you have not completely grasped the concept that you're part of the original thought. You don't see clearly that you and I and everyone are all beings of love. We're made of love. We are here to allow love to flow through us. We're here to allow all the powers and energies of the universe to flow through us and out into the world, colored with our personality, with our service, with our quirky ways. Never be afraid to be different. Never be afraid to be the oddball. We are going to be the oddball anyway. We all have our own ways of being so. It's perfectly all right, because the Creator is fascinated by each and every one of us and is trying to learn who it is by observing our experiences. So be not only a witness to your life, but a dancer in it. And enjoy, enjoy, enjoy. And know always, all is one, and that one thing is love. So, Monica, what have you for me tonight?
Well, we actually have a couple of callers, so I'm going to take the first one from area code 229. Hi, you're on the air. Who are we speaking to?
Hi, this is Jay, and I'm from Orlando, Florida.
Hi, Jay. How are you doing tonight?
Hi, Monica. Hi, Carla.
Hi, Jay.
I'm actually good. Actually, I'm very happy. I've had a good week. I'm a musician, and I have written two books of music that I got copyrighted this week. It's done. And so,
wow.
And it's spiritual music and healing music, and I'm a light worker, and I actually do live by the motto "I am love." So a lot of people say, you know, a lot of different things. I always say, "Be love always."
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I'm interested though, Carla, if you, because I'm in my pursuit of spiritual development. You know, you hear things different from different people. And I'm unfamiliar with your work, and I am spiritually growing always. And so I'm wondering if you see what possibly could be a limit in my clairvoyance.
No, I psychically speaking, I'm thick as a plank, Jay. But I think that we're limited. Only by those things that catch us unawares. Potentially, we don't have any limits, but so many
right.
times, you know, I think we're like beings that are dappled with light and shadow, like the light that comes down through a forest, you know, and all the leaves put their little shadows into the light. And we don't know what shadows are on us of culture from our parents and our teachers and so forth until suddenly we find ourselves in the middle of some sort of interpersonal transaction, or we're in a situation, maybe it's with ourselves, maybe it's with another person or a group of people, and something feels dead. Something isn't alive and moving. And we go, where did that come from? And it takes a real, genuine commitment to stop when you feel that and go back to the way things felt and ask yourself, how'd that happen? What was I thinking? You know, what thoughts did I think that created that in me? Because that's where our limitations come from. They don't come from some boogeyman outside that is trying to limit us. I think,
right.
although this happens, of course, I mean, from time to time, I think the greatest of our limitations happen to us because we have only half paid attention to our suppositions and our assumptions. And often, in our pursuit of telling the truth, we get lost in our intellect, And we have a justification here and a rationale there and a process of thought going on. And it helps so much to release all that, to let it go and let it fly. And then ask insight, where is the joy that does not ever come from rationale? Where is the laughter that does not come from logic? And find yourself using not only your left brain, but also your right brain. And if you are, as I am sometimes, too much on the right brain side, using your powers of analysis and your powers of logic, as well as your powers of intuition, so that you're balanced and everything, you know, is on balance for you to be able to have spirit move through you and give you that which you are supposed to bring through. I think it's wonderful that you finally got some copyright for your music, and I hope that that's the beginning of great things for you.
I'm sure it is. I'm very blessed. You know, psychically speaking, I believe my music is, you know, obviously from source, because it's music of love and healing. And I believe, you know, all things that are high energy and from love and source are from source. And I think I have such compassion and desire for clairvoyance for some reason, yet and I understand freeing, because when I do my music, I free myself to create from nothing, and yet I still I'm missing something, or I just don't understand a concept that's out there.
Well, lift away from that, Jay. Don't let yourself become attached to an outcome, even a great outcome like wanting to be more clear-sighted. It's not necessary to be attached to any particular outcome. What you need to do is say, not my will, but thine. And then loosen it, leave it go. And whatever is for you, ask, set your intention, let it come through me, let it be my highest and best. I set my intention to serve. And just use, let yourself be used, and have the faith that that is exactly what you're supposed to do right now. There's no need to pilot your ship beyond a certain point. There's no need to direct the flow of your work beyond a certain point, because spirit is going to come charging through the door and say, get a piece of paper, get your guitar, get your instrument, get your axe, do it now. I've got something. Put it down. You're not going to remember this, so get it down right now, you know, put it on tape, whatever.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many times that's happened to me with music or with poetry or whatever. You know, that's the creative process, so set your intention and then let it free. And don't ever have that feeling, I need more, I should do more. You know, that is in itself a limiting thought.
I guess what it is fear of inability. You know, I guess that must be because...
Right, so why waste a single moment on it? When you
right.
make a thought like that, say, well, you know, here I am, use me, and then just flow and let that be enough, because that is indeed all that you are and all that you can do is exactly
right.
to be yourself.
I think I absolutely understand what you're saying. Thank you for your time, and I appreciate it.
Oh, it's delightful to share energy with you, Jay.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you.
And
okay,
thank you,
Monica. Yes, thank you, Jay. Thanks for calling in. And
yes.
You can stick around in the chat room if you like. I'm going to put
okay,
you on mute now and go to our next caller, and from area code 954. And we have you on the air. Are you there?
This is Darlene from Florida.
Yes, hi. Did you say Darlene?
Yes.
Hi, Darlene.
Hi. I would just like to see if you have a message for my guy.
No, I'm not like that at all. I have no messages. My message is always and ever the same. I'm sorry, Darlene, but as I told Jay, I have no ability whatsoever. A lot of people tell me I'm psychic and that I've answered questions they haven't even asked. But as far as my having psychic hits, I just don't have that. It's not the way I work at all. And I apologize for that, but, you know, we all have our gifts.
So my guidance
would say, just be you, and everything will come beautifully in order.
Okay. So you do listen to your own guide?
I certainly do.
Oh, okay.
24/7. Oh, yes, I certainly do.
Oh, okay.
Day off. I call my guidance Holly. She's the Holy Spirit, but she's my own very flame of it. You know, we all have our own individual flames, and so I didn't want to keep calling her Holy Spirit. It seemed kind of awfully formal. So years and years ago, I started calling her Holly. And Holly and I talk all the time.
Okay. Okay, thank you so much.
God bless you.
Stand here.
Thank you for calling in, Darlene. We have another caller. I'm going to get live on the air. Hi, are you there?
Hello?
This is, let's see, area code 303?
Yes, hello?
Is that you? Yes, hi.
Hi.
Welcome to the show. What's your name?
Thank you. This is Marilyn, and I'm calling from Colorado.
Hi, Marilyn.
Hey. And I'm calling because I wanted to talk about body image and... I'm 59 years old. I've been dealing with body image issues for most of my life, and I'm not having much success. So I just thought it might be helpful to get another perspective.
Well, by body image, do you mean that you would like to look attractive and
yes,
be as I've got a funny story to tell you about that, girl.
Okay.
I remember when I was actually kind of a pretty young girl, the way that young people are always pretty, with youth and with health. And I was not much for makeup. I was more of a folk singer about the same age as Joan Baez, and I was doing the same kind of thing she was. I was singing folk songs, going to college.
Mm.
And I went with a fellow to a swimming pool, and he and I were swimming, and I pulled myself out of the pool and dripped over to him and sat down. And he looked at me and said, you know, he said, when all the other broads are swimming and they have their makeup off, you look pretty good. And I thought to myself, well, back on you too, buddy. But it's just so true. I mean, that is, to me, body image is not where it is. I think what I've learned about body image is, if you know that you're a creature of love, that you're a lovable person, and you stop worrying about it, then you become beautiful. That's as simple as that. The less you think about it, the more that you look the best that you can and then let it go, and meet the day and say, you know, well, here it is. This is it. Take me as I am, or don't take me at all, but, you know, I'm going to do my thing. It really is the better, because body images change. I love historical novels, and depending on the century and the culture in which you're reading, very voluptuous women are considered beautiful, or very slender women are considered beautiful, or tall women, or short women. The same thing with men. The slender youth is considered handsome, or the muscular youth is considered more handsome, or on and on and on.
Yeah.
And what it is we're all souls, and we're souls, and we've come into this world of appearances, and all of these appearances are mere shadows compared to the reality of who we are. And I think that if you can tune out of the buzz of gossip and doing things to yourself to try to look normal. That's really what it is, you know. You're trying to hit the cultural normality, which is considered attractive. And instead of that, just look the best that you can. You know, keep yourself clean and sweet, and then work on your thoughts. Work on your thoughts. Work on your service. Work on the things that really matter. Be somebody in your heart, you know, and let it all go away, because that's a bunch of nonsense. I'm 68, almost 69. I'll be 69 in July. I'm proud of that. I love every wrinkle. But honey, I have no more eyebrows. I've been 195. I've been 85. I'm about 120 right now. That's much more normal than I usually am, but I've been up and down and up and down. And do you know, no matter what weight I am, I get so many compliments just because I'm having a good time, and people say, you're so beautiful. And, sweetheart, I'm not. I'm not at all. I mean, if you wanted to, you know, go to the cultural norms, it wouldn't work. But the reason that people say that is that I don't care anymore. I just want to love people and be of service to people, and that's what shines forth. And I always tell people, because I'm a Christian, I say, you know, if you look at me and all you see is Christ, that's fine with me. See Christ first, then see me second. And, you know, that's the beauty part. That's the part that's actually deeply, profoundly beautiful. Let yourself be beautiful as you truly are. And have the confidence of that. And, you know, move away from this dependence on other people's opinions, because they're all concerned with their, you know, their own self-involved thoughts. If they are people that are going to judge you that way, then why would you care what they think?
Right. Thank you. That's beautiful wisdom and so appropriate and helpful. Thank you so much, Carla.
You betcha. Well, Monica, have we run through our live people? Do we have something from the forums? I'm not hearing you, Monica.
Aha, okay. Maybe it might possibly have been because I have the mute button on.
That could be.
Okay.
You silly girl.
Okay, sorry about that. All right, it has happened occasionally. All right, yes, we have run through our live callers, and yes, we do have some questions from the forum. So our first question is from someone with the initial M. I am trying to understand my 28-year-old daughter, who is very spiritual, as I am. She is a wonderfully loving young woman and listens to spirit and her heart. My issue is that I think she uses spirituality and her desire to follow her heart to make decisions about her life that are very spontaneously and sometimes very trusting of the people in front of her at the moment. I worry that she could be so trusting that she gets caught up in some kind of cult. How can I see this situation in a new light? Presently, she is in Hungary working with a group that says they are bringing in the light and making yurts. Thank you.
Well, in the first place, I would never tell you that you're all wet to think, oh dear, I do want to make sure that my daughter doesn't get involved in a cult. Now, if this bunch in Hungary is bringing in the light and making yurts and not bleeding their members for their last nickel, if they are not telling them what to do and what not to do, if they are increasing the freedom of her life rather than bringing her into a type of spiritual bondage, then she's not involved in a cult. If, on the other hand, there is a cult of personality going on there, if someone of the members is considered, you know, almost on a par with the creator or with the greatest yogi in the world or something like that, if her money keeps going away, if she has lost her identity into the group, then I think you have genuine fears. But for the most part, I remember being young. I was never in Hungary working with a group that made yurts. I like my creature comforts, and I was always willing to work for a living. Thank you very much. I will take an apartment over a tent anytime. But I'm just a city-fied kind of girl. And, you know, even if I were in the country, I'd go for a farmhouse rather than a tent. But to me, there's a great deal to be said for spontaneity, for trusting her enough to give her the room to make some choices, even if they are unfortunate choices in the short run, and she learns from them, and that you two can laugh about it later. You have lost nothing, and you've gained the respect of your daughter, who realizes that you're on her side. You're trying to support her. You're not trying to limit her. You're trying to give her, you know, your best advice and your best strengths as a mom and as a woman, as a fellow woman. So watch her in her making choices, because you can get too much information and start worrying about it and not appreciate the fullness of her own experience. I think that we're all given the gift of free will, and sometimes a person will come to adulthood and not have the immediate experience to make good choices. And so people make bad choices. But if they can simply back out of the blind alleys and start over again, then those choices were part of a learning experience. So the time that I would as a mom give the benefit of my experience to my daughter would be the time in which I saw her personality being taken away, her assets being taken away, and her being, you know, subsumed into a group. just because they're bringing in the light and making tents doesn't mean for sure that it's a cult. The marks of a cult are pretty clear, and it's sort of like being addicted to a drug or alcohol or something like that. It's a kind of addiction. If she's not addicted, if she's having a genuine experience and learning from it and retaining her identity, I think that you can breathe easily and continue to feel good. I would take all the time in the world to make any kind of a judgment about this for her, because it's so important to come across to your child as not only a person that is concerned for her, but a person that believes in her and believes that she is learning and she is going to make good choices. I'll never forget my mother watching me go off to Canada one time. I had a very bad marriage. I had a starter marriage, and it was the fourth year. My husband had left me 7 times. He'd gone off with a lover to Canada to dodge the draft. You're much too young to remember this, I'm sure, but at one time there was a draft. My husband did not want to fight in Vietnam. So he went off with his lover to Canada, where they didn't come after you to draft you. And then he called me when I had just gotten a job, a really good job, as a librarian in Boston. I was going to move from Kentucky to Massachusetts, which I dearly loved, and been to school there. And Boston is one of the second oldest public libraries in the United States. It was going to be a wonderful job for me. And he said, I need you to come to Canada because I can't find work, and I need you to take care of me, which I had been doing for 4 years. He never did work. He was just a total jerk. But, you know, I reviewed the marriage contract, and I went to Canada. And I'll never forget my mother giving me a gold pin, and it was a horseshoe. And she said, I wish you all the luck in the world. And that's all she said. and I knew that it cost her everything to say that. So try to give your child the horseshoe. And if in the end you think that you have something to say that she needs to hear, by all means, do it. But wait until you catch the rhythm of it before you make a judgment. I was looking, I got this question early in the week, and I found a nice channeling from Kuo. It's the one on April the 12th, 1992. And I really like this, the way this goes, talking about spontaneity. And maybe it will help you to think about this. The ways of love often look foolish, but I think that you can move through this in a beautiful, rhythmical way. And I wish you great luck with that, and thank you so much for asking this question. Monica, I know you've had a child, and I have not. Do you have anything to add to this?
Ooh, I think you pretty much covered it very well, and pretty much, honor their choices. And I'm very, very grateful that I've had a good relationship with my son in that he does ask for my opinions about his decisions quite frequently, not always. And I try to just answer honestly when he does ask, and if he doesn't ask, try not to offer advice unsolicited. But there are times when I do, and there's times when he appreciates it. There's times when he doesn't take my advice, and he has to learn on his own, and that's just part of life. And yeah, it's challenging to stand back and watch them do that, because sometimes it's a very rough road that they take. But in the end, I think they're stronger for it. So, yeah, I guess that's all I would have. All I would add to that.
Okay.
Carla, we do have another live caller, and unless you had anything else to add on that topic.
Oh, that was it. That was the whole
okay.
Shot.
Okay. We have someone from area code 303, another 303. Hi, are you there? Nope, she's not there. Or he's not there. Okay, it looks like they hung up, so I'm going to go to the next question, which is from Shauna. And Shauna says, Namaste, dear Carla. I know we've never met, but in truth, I feel deeply connected to you at the soul level. I have followed your blog for so long now. Your incredible recent healing journey gave me courage to have the hip replacement surgery that was desperately needed last December 19th. I'm doing quite well, thank God, and feel indebted to you for sharing your journey so openly. I found the Law of One back in 2006, but honestly, my intellect can't begin to comprehend much of it other than we are all one and love, and I'm totally content with that. I so enjoyed your weekly Q&A, and I'm deeply grateful that you are well enough to come back to us via this medium. God bless you, Monica, Jim, Gary, and everyone else who makes this material available. One question I do have for you is related to quieting the mind in preparation for meditation. Do you have any tactics that you find beneficial? Hugs, Shauna.
Oh, Shauna, that's great. Thank you very much. Thank you so much for the kind words, and I'm so glad that my story gave you the resources that you needed to take care of your own health. That's great. Good on you, girl. I'm so proud of you. That's wonderful. And as to resources that you might be able to use in your preparation for meditation, number one is not to worry about getting your mind completely quiet. I know that everybody says you've got to get your mind quiet. Well, it's really a good idea, but what if you have a noisy mind? What if your mind has music that bursts in at odd moments? What if you have a certain undisciplined creativity to you that means that every once in a while you're just going to get a thought through there? Well, that's been my case my whole life. I never have had much luck in becoming totally quiet before I begin meditating. But what I do is allow that. I make space around it. I watch my thoughts rise, and I watch them fall away. I don't follow them. At least when I catch myself, I stop following them. I mean, I'll find myself planning a menu in the middle of a meditation or doing something other that, you know, that's completely not at the level of a meditation at all and not something that I plan to do. And so I'll go, oh, okay, it's really not something I want to do now. I'm meditating. Lead myself back away from that. Go back to the meditation. And go back to just sensing, feeling into that spaciousness and that peace that I begin to feel around me when I meditate. But there are things that you can do that keep your mind quiet. And I have tried them from time to time, and while I find them useful, I don't find them so persuasive that I would rather do that than the way I do it, which is just to sit out there and be quiet and allow my thoughts to arise and to fall away. One thing that's really helpful is visualization. There's a whole history and cultural art movement involved in the visualizations having to do with all of the world religions, whether it's Christian icons or whether it is the beautiful mandalas of the yogis, or all sorts of cultures have their ways of entraining the mind, runes and tarot images and looking at a perfect rose and so forth and so on. And sometimes it's very satisfying simply to focus on an image or on a phrase and allow the mind to get caught up in repeating that phrase or touching into that image, perfect rose. You can look at each petal of that rose. You can look at the wonderful way it smells and the wonderful way it's put together and the cunning way that the leaves fall and to have it right behind it to make a beautiful frame. There is a magical tradition that is very helpful for some people that are not at all romantical by nature, do not find it helpful to use mystical things like runes and tarot images or perfect roses. But you can train the mind simply to hold an image. Usually people like this are very keen on sacred geometry, and they will hold the image of a perfect circle or a perfect triangle or more of a complex sacred geometrical form with, you know, 12 or 22 or however many angles that they have. And this also is a way of entraining the mind. And then with a mantra, you're entraining the mind with a phrase or with a sound like Om, and allowing yourself to move beyond thought into a conceptually free zone where the intellect really can't get in there. It can't get in there. So sometimes it's very helpful. I have always found it helpful to meditate to music. And I used to do that a lot more than I do it now. I would go to the library and go to one of the listening rooms and put on something that I especially loved. Usually it was Bach, Johann Sebastian Bach, and just spend the 40 minutes or an hour, however long that piece took to play through, resting in the structures, the magnificence of that music. So there are lots of ways that you can use to quiet the mind, but above all things, I say to you, do not worry about it. If your mind doesn't want to be quiet, then have a noisy meditation. You're still intending to meditate. You're still very sincere. And that's the important thing. It's not how well you do it. It's how lovingly you go to it and how pure your intention is in doing it. Thanks so much for asking. And I also got this question a little earlier in the week, and I was poking around on the archives, which I dearly love to do, and I found a very nice comment by Latouille. It's dated April 2nd, 1982. It's a long time ago. And it was actually during the time that I was channeling those of Ra, but I was also doing conscious channeling as well. And I'll just read this to you because I think it's very helpful. We would have you understand, my sister, that the mind is a servant to the individual that must be trained, just as an animal such as a dog can be trained to behave or allowed to run amok. The training process is a slow process, and immediate success in conquering this frolicsome creature is seldom encountered. However, consistent practice is always beneficial to the accomplishment of the taming of the beast, so to speak. To this end, we would suggest using one or more of several tools, the greatest and most effective of which is consistency. It is important to be consistent in your demands of your mind in that the frequency of your attempts towards meditation and the scheduling of these same attempts with consistency are both beneficial to accomplish your purpose. What you don't realize when you start meditating is that you're not used to sitting there without attending to something. You sit quietly in a class, you attend to the teacher, hopefully. You sit quietly in front of the computer, you're attending to your game or your Facebook or whatever. You sit quietly in front of the television and you're attending to the show. You are not simply sitting there attending to nothing. And it makes the body feel funny to do something that it doesn't normally do. So you really have to train your body to meditate. So do it daily if you can, even if you can only spare 5 or 10 minutes. Give it that 5 or 10 minutes every day. And just keep doing it. Keep being consistent. And I think you'll find that you come along with that as you do with any new habit, that it gets more and more comfortable to you, and you end up craving that time that you can spend in the inner room.
Okay, thank you, Carla. We have time just for one last question, and this one is from Jake Robb. Hello, Carla. I am so glad you're back on the radio. I've missed your voice this last year. My question to you is this. I've been experiencing the dark night of the soul for approximately 3 or 4 years, and although there is a gradual progression, I just can't shake this endless sadness and complete lack of energy. No matter what I do, it's there. I meditate every day, I go to the beach daily, and I breathe the air. I contemplate the beauty around me, yet the bleakness remains. I try very hard to accept the emotions, but after so many years, it remains, chipping away at my will to live. I'm finding it impossible to live with the sorrow and give it the spaciousness it deserves. Surely it must come to an end somehow. Can you speak to this topic of perpetual despondency, please? Thank you.
You bet, Jake Robb. I certainly can, and I'm glad to talk to you about that. I've been thinking about that this week. This is a question that I got early in the week, too. And I think that it's a question that I hear more than most questions, because there are a lot of people, sensitive, good people, that just find it difficult to live on Earth. They find the vibrations tough. They find people so often service to self and so often full of narcissism and ego and selfishness. And you get into a feeling of just being detached from everything and not wanting to enter into life. I have had dark nights of the soul that lasted a long time. My longest was 6 years, and that was when my beloved companion Don Elkins died. From 1984 to 1990, I was just lost up in grief. And in feelings of guilt, because somehow I had not been able to keep him alive. He committed suicide, and I kept thinking, surely there was something I could have said, that I could have done, that would have kept him with us. And I always, you know, felt that I was such a good support to him, and suddenly nothing was working. And it took me a full 6 years before I found myself able to think about his death without going back into the feelings and being plunging back into all of those difficult feelings of of suicidal grief and guilt, and the feeling that if he was dead, I should be too. And I thought also about my current situation, which is actually kind of dicey, physically speaking, not otherwise. But I'm in a situation right now where it's been 9 months since I had the operation on my lumbar spine. I haven't been able to get out of bed rest since that time. I've had no less than 9 operations to try to clean the surgical wound from infections that it picked up during the operation in the hospital there. I came home with 5 infections that I did not have when I went into the hospital. It was a very difficult thing. And now I'm, as I told Monica earlier in the show, I'm doing better. And I'm on something called a wound vac, which is a very slow process of healing a wound. They leave the wound open, and the pressure of the wound vacuum removes any infection or anything else from the wound and helps it create new tissue, helps it heal. And it's working, but it's working to the point where I said to the doctor the last time I saw him, well, do you think it's 5 more months, 6 more months? He said, yeah. He wouldn't guess. He says, I don't have a crystal ball. And I have some other problems, too, that keep me close to the bathroom. People don't really like to talk about that particular kind of problem, but I've got an interstitial cystitis, which means that sometimes as often as every 10 minutes, I may have to go to the bathroom. And it's very difficult to do teaching, to keep public appearances, or even to go to a restaurant with a friend if you're going to have to hit the bathroom every 10 minutes. And I never know when that's going to happen to me. It happens fairly frequently. And I ask myself, well, why am I not despondent? Why don't I feel bleak? You know, and I realize that there's a technique that I use that's about the simplest thing you could do, and I share it with you easily. I don't think about it. I don't think about it. This is so simple, it's hard to grasp. But if you're on the cross and you're feeling totally crucified by life, one way or another, mentally, emotionally, physically, spiritually, well, there it is. That's what your situation is. And nothing that you can do or say is going to be powerful to blow through that if it's really deep in your body. I imagine that you've already sought medical help and made sure that it's not a simple chemical problem in your body. I know I had a family member, my mother, who was depressed for years and found that she lacked a certain chemical in her body. I think it was lithium. And simply by taking lithium, that particular chemical, she was able to experience relief. And it was something that you'd think it would be very complex and difficult and, you know, take a lot of analysis and psychological help to move through. But actually, it was simply that her body was not producing enough of this one element so that her body could produce the endorphins and the happiness feelings that she needed in order to feel happy. And it was such a simple answer to what seemed to be a very, very complex problem. I would definitely say go to the doctor and check it out. Make sure that this is not a physical problem, but is more emotional or mental or spiritual. But if it turns out to be such, I really believe that there are times when we think to ourselves before an incarnation, you know, I'd like to get the most out of this incarnation. And so I'm going to give myself a really tough incarnation. I'm going to come in with some real problems, some mental problems. I'm going to be so sensitive that I see things other people don't see. I'm simply going to be perpetually despondent. And that will enable me to declare and exhibit my total faith that the Creator's gifts to me are always good and that I, by faith, am willing to take them on, whatever they are, and live with them and find the best way possible to live and to give. Not bewailing my woes, not focusing on them at all, but working around them and finding ways to serve and ways to help and ways to be loving and ways to see the Creator in ourselves and in others. And just focus on those things and focus on your faith. Focus on your knowledge that all is truly well, regardless of what it feels like. And simply say to yourself, you know, when I get a chance after this incarnation to talk with my higher self, I'm going to find out if this really was a good idea, because frankly, today I'm just not sure. But meanwhile, go ahead and have a good life and believe, have faith that all is well and all will be well. And it's very possible that one day you'll wake up and it will be lifted from you, because that is the nature of the dark night of the soul so often. I think that suffering is much misunderstood. It seems to most people that the thing that they want to do is remove themselves from suffering. But I think we all do suffer. So I think that suffering is a gift of a kind from the Creator. It gives us a chance to go deeper. It gives us a chance to become empty. It gives us a chance to get down on our knees and say, of myself, I am nothing, but I will serve you, and I will give you myself, and I will live by faith that all is well. And as you do these things, you become a beautiful person that's a shining light to others. And if that happens, that you experience this all your days, then so be it. But I honestly believe that the day will come when you may wake up and realize the dawn has broken on the dark night of my soul, and I am released. And praise the Creator for that release. I hope that happens soon for you. One technique that you might find helpful, because I've seen this happen for two or three people I have counseled through the years, I have encouraged them to visit someone who is very good at hypnotic regression. And the idea here is to go into regression, to have the regressor take you back beyond this lifetime to when you and your higher self were making plans for this lifetime. And to ask your higher self, while you're in that focused trance state, have the person that's doing the hypnosis ask your higher self, has he or she learned this lesson? Could he or she now be released from this and not have to deal with that anymore? And I have seen two or three instances where people have been released from physical or emotional pain, simply completely released, because the higher self said, well, yeah, you know, he or she really has gotten the point and has learned the lesson, and I think it is time to move on. So you might try that if all else fails. But if nothing works, then simply don't think about that. Don't think about that part of things. And focus on how you can react to the present moment in such a way that you're of service to yourself and the people about you, and most of all, to the Creator.
Thank you so much, Carla. We are actually out of time, and thank you, everyone who submitted questions. You have been listening to LL Research's In the Now with Carla L. Ruckert. I'm your host, Monica Leal. If you've enjoyed the show, please visit our websites, llresearch.org and bringforth.org. That's bring, the number 4, th.org. Thank you so much for listening in, and a special thank you to those who submitted questions. And please come join us next week. We'll be here Friday, February 17th at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern. Have a good week.